This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy six Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1 liter flavors and get the seventh free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy six and get the seventh free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
It's Jeremy White and Joe DiBiase.
All I'm saying is, as a society, we missed an opportunity to have the upside-down logo represent that your franchise is in distress.
Culturally,
now those hats are cool,
yeah.
As opposed to, listen, I like this team, and I know things are pretty messed up right now. I'm not happy about it.
It's the new paper bag over your head. Show up to a game with a jersey where the Sabre logo is rotated 90 degrees. You just have one ready to go, so if you're mad at them that day when you wake up, like, they lost yesterday, I'm going to wear the upside-down hat.
Here's our billion-dollar idea, Joe. There's a little thing in the back, and you can undo it and rotate it around and put it back on to represent every day how you feel about the team that you're wearing the hat for.
It's a billion-dollar idea.
We are. We shut down the stream. We're done. We're out of here. We're retiring on this idea now.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on Western New York Sports Giant, WGR Sports Radio 550.
Well, hello, everyone. Jeremy and Joe, good morning.
It is gross out. We're going to need a new word, actually, for what it is outside. Like,
yes.
Gross, a mess. Like, these aren't doing justice what...
I went to let the dog out. So it snowed yesterday, you know, right? Wintry wonderland, kind of nice. I went to let the dog out, and I didn't quite see what was happening outside, but I heard it.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The rain is a kind of rain that it was just a gross rain.
That you knew it was going to freeze also.
Yes.
You know, right away.
In whatever snow fell yesterday was slippery. So, yeah, it's pretty nasty outside. So, plan accordingly. It was expected to be kind of like this. And after all of this rain, it's going to snow again. So, yeah, wintry mix.
Water in the bottom and then ice and then snow.
Yeah, snow
is what
water,
we're headed for.
Ice, snow, all that. Yeah, pretty.
That's
nasty.
Where we need like a new word. Like, it's like a shell out there. Like, you know the shell that you can like pour on your ice cream and then it freezes so that you've got the ice cream underneath and the shell. That's what the ground feels like right now.
Yeah.
Like I'm stepping on top of that shell and then my foot is going down into like a puddle that I didn't even know was there underneath. Which I guess actually might be better than just walking on straight ice. I don't even know what's better. The possibility of slipping or just having a foot submerged by water, because that's what you have outside right now.
It's nasty. Well, good morning. We're hanging out today on a Thursday. We'll talk with Brian Koziel at 6:30 about last night's Four Nations and the Genesis, because one of the elevated golf events is on the way. Paul Hamilton as well. Plenty to get to. Four Nations last night. Star of the show was, of course, the 3-2-1 scoring system.
Mm-hmm.
It's front and center. It's on full display. We'll get to that in a minute. But
they went for it at the end, right?
They did.
Yeah, yeah. Like, very much so.
Of course, the 3-2-1 score. I mean, I will give you the full-throated 3-2-1 explanation. Not that you need convincing, but
no.
For anyone out there that's saying, like, how big of a deal could it really be? It's on full display with the U.S. playing Finland tonight. You know, the winners, if they win a regulation, have the best win. and they're in first place, and it's not on some tiebreaker we have to explain. They just have more points. It would be a beautiful, beautiful thing. But the game itself, you know, man, the biggest upset of all time, half kidding, is that Sweden got back into that game because the Canadians looked like the Monstars for the first 10 minutes.
I thought the game – I bet – Sweden to win that game in regulation yesterday, which you got great odds. Like, it was almost plus 400 for that. And I felt like after 5 minutes that I was, like, not even going to come close.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like it was dead within 5 minutes. Canada, when did Sweden get their first shot on goal? Like, 15 minutes into the game? It took forever for them to get anything.
A shot. Yeah, it took forever to get a shot, and the Canadian power play was buzzing. Their first power play was like a globetrotter play.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, never mind. Not only did I think that Canada looked like they would win the game 7-1, I thought, okay, they're not going to lose a game in this tournament.
Yeah.
And sure enough. What ended up happening, Joe? Wasn't it that their goaltender let them down and let Sweden back in the game?
Uh-huh.
There's a bad goal?
100%.
That's really what it was.
I think he had two, really. Like, the first one that Brodin scores for Sweden is not an easy one to stop because it's high and it does, I think, maybe even go top shelf, but it was middle of the net. He had two goals that were scored in the middle of the net.
Yep.
And, yeah, the last one that he lets in, or not the last one, the second goal, just a shot down the middle, right? That one was the middle of the net. That's why I thought that they could lose in a tournament like this.
It's one of the reasons they did not win this game. So, yeah, it was great though, right? It was definitely anybody wondering, myself here, about how intense it would be, what it would look like. It was absolutely a high intensity hockey game, best on best. You couldn't possibly put enough words together to say how much better it was than just one of these all-star games where Nikita Kucherov doesn't take it seriously and skates half-ass.
Yeah.
You couldn't possibly say enough words about how much better it was than something like one of those.
It's just not even comparable, right? It's just not even, it's not even remotely close. And it's a card they have always had the ability to pull that the other leagues don't. Right? Like, we sit around here once a year, all-star season, with the Pro Bowl and the NHL all-star game and the NBA all-star game all kind of happening around the same time. And every year it's, okay, how do we fix this? You know, let's make this better. Nobody likes it except for the kids, which is really who it was meant for in the first place. But how do we fix it? And there really isn't an answer, except isn't the NHL kind of always had this card to pull? They always could just do this. Like, this isn't that complicated. This isn't that many players involved. It's four teams worth of guys. You put the flags on their crest, and you throw it into a tournament format, and they're going to be what was happening last night. Dahlin throws McDavid to the ice, right, in the first period. By the time the second period starts, like, it was notable to me that every time a guy had the puck, he was getting hit. Like, not quite playoff intensity, but... I thought
kinda.
It was a lot.
I thought it was playoff intensity. You just don't have rosters that are going to do a lot of, well, I don't want to say they're doing a lot of hitting, but especially in the early stages of that game, I saw a couple of Canadian writers and hockey writers saying, like, don't get this wrong. Structurally, there is defense here, even though it looks like it's a wide-open game. And the reason it might look like that is if you had 10 McKinnons on the ice, Joe, you would get the fastest game of all time. It might not look like it, a lot of defense is being played just because that's the nature of the way it is played when he's out there. It is nonstop. It is super fast. And, you know, whatever. I thought the whole thing was great. Highest reviews for the Four Nations, right down to the ice surface, which has Four Nations on one side and then Confrontation de Nations on the other.
I did like
that.
Which
is really, that's what it should have been called. It should have been called the Confrontation of Nations.
The Confrontation of
Nations.
We
should have called it that. In French, it's got a better name. Four Nations.
I mean, it rhymes.
Okay. Yes.
Confrontation of Nations.
There's a four in there, too. Confrontation of Four Nations, they call it.
Okay,
and that's just it's just a better name. It's a missed opportunity. It's okay. We'll pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off.
At least half the tournament's going to have that.
Yeah. Tonight, the U.S. So what do you got on it? You got Dahlin thoughts? You got Team USA thoughts? You got presentation thoughts? Like, what jumps out at you? You think I'm kidding when I say 3-2-1. Like, the 3-2-1 is... to me, a big story here. And also extended overtime, a 10-minute overtime.
Yeah.
When did the goal get scored? It got scored into the period of time where they would have been a shootout.
It would have been
six
a shootout.
Minutes in.
Yep. The we need your politician from Connecticut to get on the phone with the NHL because they started that game. The official puck drop said 8:10 on the apps that I was looking at. And
it
when
was
did
8:24.
That was it? 8:24.
It was 8:24.
Okay, so we got a lot of previews last night, which is fine. Like I don't mind the ceremony and everything, right? Like they're introducing the teams and oh, there's Daniel Alfredson's on the Sweden bench. Like okay. Like, that was all fine. Here's Mario Lemieux, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, just start that all at, you know, 7:45.
But there are at least two figures, one very in particular, who, why was he there?
Who am I missing? Who was there?
Austin Matthews. Why is Austin Matthews being introduced? He's on a team that plays tomorrow, is that why? Was this
the start
opening
of the tournament, and is he even the captain of the U.S.?
That's why this took so long. Mike Richter and Austin Matthews got introduced. They almost kind of treated it like a little mini opening ceremonies.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Maybe, I think Matthews is the captain of the team. So maybe, did they introduce the Finnish captain, too?
I don't even know.
I didn't notice.
I was cleaning the house, and I was so excited to watch this thing start at 8, and movie trailers, movie previews.
Movie previews.
Oh, 8:24. All right. Let's go. And I'm kind of laughing because as they're doing the introductions, I'm thinking, of course they picked a place where they're going to have to do the introductions in two languages, thereby making it take even longer to get us to the actual hockey.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the quality of hockey, you started to say this. I had a thought about the game and the way that it looked last night that I know is not really rational because there probably aren't enough good players to make a game look like that every single game, right? We know that.
In the NHL?
Yes. There aren't enough players to make it look that good, to play that fast. You don't have 30 McKinnons that you can spread around the league and 30 McDavids and 30 even Colton Parayko's, whatever. It made me think how the NHL, we love hockey and we hate the NHL. Isn't that a fairly normal kind of thing to feel because of the way they run their league from the 3-2-1 point system to offside reviews and stopping games? It just feels like sometimes
the way they deal with suspensions and hits and stuff. Just it's almost like every layer of what they do feels like it just like is a head scratcher.
Yeah, and maybe that's unfair, but the way that I thought about it last night was when they let this out and let everyone see the beauty and the speed and the way this game can be played, it makes me feel like, man, the NHL kind of really holds this sport hostage. Because at its best, it's so incredible. And the NHL, you know, it's also, the game's healthy and it's in a good space. And I'm not here to sit here and trash it. It's just, you wish you could get games like that a lot more often. And the fact that it was the first time in how many years? 10 years?
9 years, yeah.
It's kind of incredible. It took that long for this league to get its act together to give that to us.
Yeah.
And the good news, of course, is that they've already announced they're going to do this every 2 years now. So it's going to be Olympics and then World Cup of Hockey alternating every 2 years.
Right.
So, okay, mix it in. That's what you get. You're going to get best on best in alternating every other year between the World Cup of Hockey and the Olympics. So we're going to get it more often, but, man, it just jumps out when you actually see it.
Yeah. And I guess the NHL criticism for me and why it's been 9 years, and this is why Bettman can drive me crazy with a lot of stuff, the way the NHL operates, not just him, is why has it been 9 years? Why was last night so cool? Why did we miss it so much? Because they use it as a bargaining chip. Everything that they seem to do in the league is, oh, well, can we use this as a bargaining chip in labor negotiations? That's how they operate. And that's why there wasn't Olympics a couple of times. That's why there haven't been these other tournaments, I think, because they've kind of put it to the players, say, okay, oh, you want to play for Team USA, huh? You want to play for Team Canada? Okay, well, you got to give us something then. You got to give us an additional percentage of revenue in our revenue split. Just it's gross how they've done that. Where I'm not saying no other sports leagues are like that, but I watch what Adam Silver does with the NBA, and he doesn't operate that way. Like, he just does, oh, is this better for the sport? Okay, well, that's better for my long-term vision then of my league. That's how they operate. So there's definitely frustration on that front, but I'm just glad to have it. I am hopeful that they are true to their word. This will be a thing every other year, and it won't always be as good as it was last night, right? Like, if they go to a World Cup format, the one thing that holds back best on best international hockey a little bit is last night you get Canada and Sweden. And like you said, first couple minutes, it's like, wow, this looks like the Monstars against, you know, who. And that's like the third best team there is that they were playing across from. Like, there's not this long list of teams that you could bring. Like, if they do a World Cup format, I'll be interested to see how many teams they bring. Because if I get Canada versus, you know, you've seen tournaments, you've seen Canada versus Norway last night. How long do we have that game on for? Because it might be 6-0 by the end of the first period.
Right. To this point, there are other international games that were being played. I saw somebody pointing out, like, Hong Kong and Japan or Chinese Taipei. Like, there's another international tournament happening right now.
Right.
And, yeah.
Like, D2 IIHF or something.
Yeah.
I think that exists.
That's where you really can't get on hockey because it's not soccer. Soccer, you have,
right.
You know.
Soccer,
20,
you could, yeah.
30 countries that you could watch, maybe more than that, and think, like, I've got, you know, my money's worth in hockey, you might be at 5.
Right, if you're right. So maybe you invite a couple of more, and you throw on a World Cup. So I'm just glad to have it. I'm glad that the game was entertaining. I'm glad that, like, the players definitely were into it and were physical and looked like they cared. I could have used a few more power plays getting called, because that was a spectacle right away. And how many more were called after that? Was there one?
Yeah.
There was one more penalty called after that early one in the first minute. So that would be the other thing I would hope that they, like, don't just let them play. Like, we're here to see the skill, and when you see the skill is when these teams are on the power play. So that's a nitpicky thing, but I just thought it really, I think it met expectations last night.
Yeah.
I thought it definitely met expectations.
Yeah, it made me excited to see the rest of the tournament. Made me excited to see Team USA tonight against Finland. Made me excited for Saturday, Canada-USA.
It also made me pray for Henry Okiharju, who's going to have to play a lot of minutes for Finland, and seeing the level of forwards that you have on this tournament, it's like, wow, look out. That's going to be tough for some guys.
The other thing the Four Nations offer is that, you know, football does this a little bit. I'm trying to think of, like, the sports that are best for this, and they probably all do it to some level. The NBA, sure. So, whatever. If you have long careers, hockey might be – let me start again. Would you agree? Hockey has the longest careers for the great players on average. LeBron still playing is kind of like, wow, LeBron is still playing.
Yeah.
Same with Durant. I feel like in hockey it's very normal. The fact that we're watching Crosby and McDavid both play on a team like this.
With Crosby still being, like, amazing, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something to that where you can have two players. I mean, if Connor Bedard were on this Canadian team, which he probably could be, you could have guys 20 years apart and they're playing and you don't really notice things missing a beat. And again, like I said, with LeBron, you would get that. And with Durant, you would get that, too, who's been playing forever. But that's another nice little function of these international tournaments is, how old was McDavid when Crosby got drafted? Was he 6? You know, you just have guys playing with their heroes for their country, and that's also an easy thing to line up is country. It's like, yeah, you grow up playing for your country. The TNT did a great job of introducing the entire tournament and the importance of playing for your country with these guys. So I'm all the way in. I thought everything about it really worked.
Yeah. Yeah, MacKinnon and Crosby, they pointed out, was like they've played – They're playing together on the same line, and MacKinnon grew up watching him. They're from the same hometown. They're both from Nova Scotia.
Mm-hmm.
So you had that connection there.
Cole Harbour, right?
Cole Harbour, yeah, I think that's right. I think that's probably right about even more than...
The generational crossover, I guess, is the
yeah,
way to say
that's
all that.
Probably even more true than, like, quarterbacks in football, right? But even that, like, you're not... Like, it's the other positions, isn't it? It's like the quarterback and the receiver's not playing at that high level at 37 years old.
Right.
So,
and you also, I guess the biggest part of it is, in football, the quarterback can't play with the quarterback he grew up loving. The best we've got is Brady and Mahomes played against each other. That's not the same as Mahomes playing with the quarterback he, you know, idolized his entire career, which is something that hockey does give us.
That's right. Yeah, we definitely got that. We got it at least with Crosby, right?
Yep.
I don't know how many other stories we'll have like that. I mean, well, maybe for like for Sweden, like, I don't know. I didn't hear Dahlin talk about this, but did Dahlin grow up watching Erik Karlsson? Maybe not like when he was a little kid, but when he was a teenager.
Yeah.
Like, and he's out there with him on the same ice last night making passes together. Yeah, Karlsson would have been drafted when Dahlin was 9 years old. So, you know, there could be a bunch of those, I think, around this tournament. So
803-0550 if you want to throw a phone call our way or just, you know, give us a thought on the tournament. The highlight of the tournament for Sabres fans is what? Dahlin decking McDavid?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, he decked McDavid. And not on an open ice hit so much as just a man's move.
Yeah. McDavid got him up high a little bit, and then Dahlin just kind of looked up like, what? And then threw him to the ice, basically.
Yep. Let's get to Paul in Buffalo, who's called in on the game and on Dahlin himself as well. Good morning, Paul.
Guys, how are you? I thought it was a spectacular hockey game. And you called it right. The Canadian forwards specifically came out like the Monstars. They were unbelievable. And I must say, it has been a privilege to be my age, which is mid-40s. I have watched Sidney Crosby's entire career. His first assist on the power play, that is legendary to me. That was just uncanny. Behind the back, backhand, through the middle of a Swedish defenseman, and Nate McKinnon was just thunderstruck that pass came to him. Unbelievable. I will say the thing that changed the momentum a little bit, I think, was Dahlin throwing Connor McDavid on his keister. And then if you look in the second period, McDavid and Dahlin's shift mirrored one another, and I thought he got the better of McDavid multiple times. And then for no apparent reason that I can detect, his coach benched him in the third period. He was on the ice for the final shift of the game in regulation, and then he didn't see a second in overtime. Meanwhile, Victor Hedman, God bless him, he couldn't move out there in overtime. I mean, Nathan McKinnon turned him inside out multiple times in overtime. Meanwhile, they have Rasmus Dahlin stapled to the bench. That coach needs to figure out what the hell he's doing, because he's got his best player stapled to the bench. I thought there were points in the first period of that game. Rasmus Dahlin controlled it. I don't know what the coach saw that I missed, but I thought he was arguably Sweden's best player for the 17 minutes he got to play. I have no idea what I missed, guys. For Team USA, you have an excellent center group against you today. Barkov and Aho, top two centers for Finland. That's their best group as their centers. Our forwards, though, they're big, strong, and fast, and not to look past Finland, but when we play Canada Saturday night, we need our big, strong, fast forwards to play some bully ball with those Canadian forwards, because I think that's how we're going to get them, and then we'll take care of their Swiss cheese goaltending. 8-4, U.S. over Canada Saturday night, guys. Have a good one.
8-4. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, play like big. The other thing, as you mentioned, like play big boy hockey, or you need these forwards to do this, I think it's something that was said by, I don't know if it was Crosby or some player said it, the layoff for international hockey and the fact that McDavid and these guys had not really dressed for international hockey, of course, everyone should have expected them to come out guns blazing. First time you're able to put that on in that kind of format if you grew up watching these international games. And I feel like the U.S. will be the same. Mm-hmm. You know, Eichel and Matthews, and it should just be absolutely bonkers tonight. On Dahlin, yeah. I guess, isn't that Dahlin's game? This game is going furious 100 miles per hour. Canada's coming 100 miles per hour. And what do you want out of Dahlin? What his game is, which is, Paul said, the term he used was control it. When he gets it, he's just kind of slow and smoother. He's going to take a breath for everybody. And the game slows down for him is something people would say. I would say, like, he slows the game down altogether and kind of just it becomes less frantic once he starts to put his imprint on a game.
He, in the first period, I don't know if I agree the whole game. First period, I did say, like, I thought he was their best player. Because what it was like, Sweden was, like, hit in the mouth immediately with the speed of Canada, and like all they were doing was chipping the puck forward. Who was the one dude that was holding onto the puck? and like was actually possessing it. It was Dahlin.
Yeah.
And he actually they had like no shots in the first period. The one chance they did was Dahlin holding the puck. Oh, and a lane opened up and he found Eric Sinek back door who missed it. Could have easily been a goal. I tweeted this. I was watching Dahlin every shift the way I would imagine a parent watches their kid out on the ice playing junior hockey. Like, I was getting, like, I'm watching him primarily. He makes even a little good play, and I'm like, all right, there we go. That's my guy. And then when he is, he got benched. I'm like yelling, like, what did he get benched for? And overtime goes for 7 minutes, and same, I saw Hedman. Hedman was great, I thought, in regulation, but he's definitely not like a 3-on-3 merchant. Like, he's not skating, you know, up and down the ice like he would have 5 years ago. So when I look up and I see Dahlin had the fewest shifts of their six defensemen, I'm like legitimately mad by that.
Yeah.
Because there's no way to me that these are good defensemen. But how do we think of Dahlin? He is... I think of him as a Norris-caliber defenseman, despite the fact he has not really come close to winning the Norris yet.
That's right.
And when he's playing less than Matthias Ekholm and an old Erik Karlsson and Gustav Forsling and Jonas Brodin, like, again, these are good players, but like Dahlin is supposed to be a tier above all of that, I thought.
Yeah. And underlying numbers back all that stuff on Dahlin, too. My thing about that was in the first period. I just appreciated it as you're talking about how they got back in the game and all that. They interviewed the Sweden coach, and it's 2-0, and they don't have a shot on goal yet. And the on-ice reporter asks the coach, I forget his name, I apologize, you know, what they got to do. And Joe, I was playing a little game called Pucks to the Net. Will he say Pucks to the Net? And he's the first coach in the history of coach interviews who did not say puck to the net. He's talking execution, you know, pass it well. And I thought, like, now you know it's best on best, baby. They're not just pucks to the net here. They're thinking, what are we going to do to get back in this game?
Or is that a Swedish coach being a Swedish coach?
Maybe. It might be. 803-0550 is our phone number. The Four Nations underway. Canada wins in overtime last night. And Team USA and Finland play tonight. The Genesis goes this week in an elevated PGA event. So that's kind of cool. Talk to Brian Koziel about both the Four Nations and the Genesis coming up on the other side. And Sal State of the Bills tight ends is going to go at WGR550.com today. We were going to have Alec Anderson, who signed a one-year deal with the Bills. He's going to move in next week. So maybe Monday, Alec Anderson will talk with the Bills offensive lineman, who's a bit of a household name as a sixth man on the offensive line. So plenty to get to. Our draft of coaching changes, lots and lots of your phone calls along the way. 803-0550 to join us on WGR.
Marner, full stride into the zone. Mitch Marner scores! Mitch Marner! An overtime winner for Team Canada!
Four Nations Game 1 goes to Canada. So they have 2 points in the standings. Sweden has one, and if somebody wins in regulation tonight, they would have the most points. 3 for regulation win, because that's better than winning when there are 3 people on the ice. You know, if you think overtime and shootouts are a gimmick, there's a great way to fix that. The 3-2-1 point system. Welcome to the future, folks. We're here. We've watched the NHL implement it to a point. It's nice. Jeremy and Joe on WGR Granite's in the Four Nations Tournament. Brian Koziel joining us on the Western Hotline. Chat a little bit about what we saw last night from Rasmus Dahlin and the tournament itself, and also roll into the Genesis, a big elevated event in the PGA this week. So we'll chat about that as well. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
Did you have the same kind of universally good, positive review of life?
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast.
With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games, or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last night's game that Joe and I both had?
I did. Especially, I thought, for sometimes as bad as the overtimes tends to be in the NHL, I mean, this one had the intensity. It had, you know, definitely those end-to-end rushes that we're always looking for to watch for. But the fact that it was 10 minutes, it almost felt like, okay, someone is going to win this here. Like, the chance of it going to a shootout, I thought, was pretty low. And it did go into what I guess you'd say the extra time would be there, because it was 6:06 was the time of the goal. So it lasted in there a little bit more. The 3-on-3, as you said, is a little bit different way to win, but I'd still rather have it be 3-on-3 than have it be shootout. So I don't know, you know, if some of this, that the since the NHL is a part of this, if they're tinkering with some things to see, hey, how could this work? I know the 3-2-1 system is something you've been talking about for years. You know, they're trying it here for this tournament. They're trying the 10-minute overtime for this tournament. Most of the things are the same NHL rules, but I'm curious if this is maybe something that they're thinking, hey, what would it look like, you know, if it played out in a league? I've always thought the argument that the league would say against the 3-2-1 is that maybe you get you get less of what they're looking for, which is keeping teams alive, because it's, you know, you can get these loser points and a regulation win doesn't necessarily separate you as much from the other teams. In the end, I think the 3-2-1 is a perfect format to decide who the best teams are, but yeah, the league may love the fact that there's parity and that there isn't much separation and it keeps almost everybody alive. And, you know, not to bring up a negative this morning, but really, other than the Sabres, every team in the East is alive right now with 30-some games to go. So maybe that's what the league wants, even though they know truly maybe it doesn't show who the best teams are in the standings as much as maybe it should.
It would still, you know, to get on that point, it would still have all those teams alive, and I think they'd be more alive because think of the Flyers here, right? You mentioned, like, every team but the Sabres. The Flyers are 6 points out behind Detroit, and they have to jump 7 teams. But what they could do in the 3-2-1 is just keep winning in regulation. And
right,
if there's a game where Boston and Columbus are playing and that game goes to Boston Columbus goes to overtime, that's a 3-point game. The Flyers win and they've gained on 2 teams in one night. And to me, that is obviously, that's a way to keep the standings more alive. So I've been, of course, waiting for the NHL to figure this out for, I don't know, 15 years. And I've just always felt like the idea that the standings would be too pulled apart just isn't true. But whatever. We'll see if they get...
I think that's a good point. While maybe it may look like you're farther apart in some sense, the availability to jump teams and keep yourself alive, though, still is higher because of the fact you're right. You have the opportunity to gain three on a night versus two. So, yeah, I think in that sense, you could argue that it is better. So, now, if we had that this year, would we say Buffalo is still in it in some sense? Hey, we just have to win a lot in regulation in order to keep things going. I guess that would be an argument, too, that you could say that, look, even the Sabres are alive. We know the max they can pick up in each game now is two. You know, if they had a possibility of getting three, mm-hmm. then we might sit here thinking that they are still at least a little bit more alive than they actually are.
Brian Kozio with us on the Western Hotline. The tournament itself, the quality of the hockey, the physicality of it, it feels like it met every expectation, Brian, and I'm glad that it got to be a close game last night because I was, you know, I don't know if you were thinking the same. Like, within 5 minutes, it felt like that could have been a blowout game.
Yeah, I mean, Canada scores less than a minute in, and I was like, oh, boy, here we go. And they are, that Canada team is so fast. They pass the puck so well. You know, just you think, oh, McDavid's off the ice here. They can take a breather. Now, Crosby played like he was, like, you know, 25 last night with the way he was going around passing the puck. They roll out McKinnon. They're loaded, obviously. Not a surprise that I guess on paper you'd say they're the favorite, but I love the fact that it got close. Obviously, these, you know, four teams right now, who can take down Canada, who can take out the United States, that's probably the headline. But I love that it got close. The fact that there was a moment there where you thought, at least I did, I was like, hey, Canada could lose this opening game in Montreal, and I was thinking, like, what's the scene like? They were, you know, there was so much uproar at the World Juniors when Canada didn't even get into one of the medal games, and I was thinking here, oh boy, if they lose this one right away here, like, the crowd could get hostile real quick here, or it'd be stunned silence, I guess, in some sense too. I was glad that it was close.
Obviously,
for a tournament to work too, you don't want it to be totally one-sided. So the fact that Sweden had, in overtime, some really good looks to win. That was when Jordan Binnington, actually, I thought, was at his best in the game.
Yeah, he had a couple moments, but I saw an overreaction. One of the Canadian media guys, Brian, like right after that, was it the Kempe goal, or maybe right after it was tied, is just, this is how Canada would, I think, operate in a game like this if they were to lose, is we need to have a national convention to find a goaltender in this forsaken country. Like, we've got all these great hockey players. Why don't we have any goalies? Which I guess you could still kind of say that. It is weird that they have superstars at every position except goaltender. But
yeah, I think that's their spot where everybody thinks that they're weaker than the rest of the four countries. And I think Binnington obviously played fine last night to win, but I could see where maybe if they don't win this tournament, that could be the reason.
Yeah.
Brian Kozio on the Western Hotline. Brian, it's a big week in the world of golf. The Genesis Invitational, which has been relocated to Torrey Pines. So you get an elevated event, and you get it at a great course as well. I mean, not to say the Genesis course. Was it normally at Riviera? Where is it, Brian?
Yeah, normally this is at Riviera. Due to the Los Angeles fires, they moved it. The course itself, they said, didn't suffer damage, but they just didn't want to use resources and security and police and, you know, all the things that go into running a major event. So, you know, for anybody that went to Oak Hill a few years ago, you know what I'm talking about with all those things. So they wanted to be sensitive to that, and that's why they moved it back to Torrey Pines. I know, so Tiger Woods is the quasi-host for this event. You said he backed out, I know, during your update. He also, being from that area, said, like, look, we can't, you know, this would be something that maybe we can support instead of being a strain. So they're going to do a lot of charitable work this week. A lot of the funds, a lot of the proceeds, a lot of the ticket sales, all these sort of things are going to go towards relief efforts. So that obviously is all positive. So yes, back to Torrey Pines where it was a few weeks ago, but a lot of the players didn't play in that tournament a few weeks ago, because that one wasn't labeled elevated. This one is. So you're getting Scottie Scheffler, you're getting Rory McIlroy, you're getting Morikawa, you're getting Aubert, you're getting JT, you're getting Jordan Spieth, who played great last night. So a ton of the big names are in it this week, and you said it, as at a recognizable great course, so it should be fun.
Brian, on the state of golf right now, for anyone that might be, you know, occasionally seeing the headline, where are things on the eventual reunification? I saw Rory yesterday had a quote about how he's making more money now and he has Liv to thank, which, you know, he never went to Liv, but the fact that he's acknowledging that, and Mickelson responded to that thread in social media with a couple of clapping hands. Where do things stand in terms of getting all the best golfers back on the best courses in the same events?
Sounds like it's very close. I think what Rory said, Adam Scott did too. They met with basically the government and Donald Trump to say that, look, they needed government permission here to see if they could get this quote partnership going with ownership with this, with the PIF fund, which of course owns Liv, this Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, to try to see if that and the PGA Tour, if they could essentially come to this financial agreement. And Rory said it was successful. So I think that was what I think they're nervous about, is that, is there going to be a government hang up on them approving whatever deal that they come about with? So it sounds like what McIlroy said is that that was positive. They want to get it back going. Yeah, Rory said we wouldn't be playing for $20 million pot this week if it wasn't for Liv. So it sounds like all these sides are softening. Honestly, even if you watch Golf Channel, you know the most outspoken person on Liv is Randall Chamblee, one of their analysts. He has even come around and said, oh, I spoke with President Trump. I spoke with some of these players and their meeting. He's like, and now I can see why maybe this can work. You know, so everybody is softening. Even the harshest critics are to think that, hey, okay, this is something that can happen to try to get the best players to playing more often than not. You saw maybe even over the last week or so, the U.S. Open is opening up an exemption for the top Liv points player that's not already exempt. The Open Championship is looking to do the same in some capacity with a couple of exemption spots. So I think it's coming around. I think it's all financials. I think it's not solely about how do we get the players on the course together that we all want to see. I think it's a lot of legal and, you know, paperwork and things like that that's holding things up, to maybe why we haven't had an official announcement yet.
Yeah, because from that front, Brian, like, when all the big names were going there, what we remember is a lot of them were kind of guys that were at the end of their careers or, you know, past their prime. And now, like, from that front, it's more about finances, because who would be the golfers that they would be, like, desperate to get back in? Like, Rory mentioned DeChambeau. Like, having him back on the tour would be good. But isn't it just... it's DeChambeau, Rahm, and like Cam Smith. Isn't that really it?
Dustin Johnson and Mickelson. I mean, even those guys might not compete on the level anymore.
That's what I mean, though. Like, how many of the Liv guys now are still considered like the best in the world? Like, is it, maybe it's four, but it's not like it's the whole tour.
But those guys, they bring people to the events,
right?
Yeah, for sure. I think DeChambeau, probably you'd say him and Rahm are at the top. And then Cam Smith, and I guess maybe I'd even throw Koepka in there. I still think he can play at a high level in a big-time event. Yeah, DJ has fallen off in terms of his play. Now, again, I don't know, you know, part of the reason he went to Liv, he wanted the I'm only going to play once every 6 weeks kind of lifestyle. So I don't know seriously how hard he's, you know, going at his game. I'm not saying he's not trying. But, yeah, Mickelson's at the back end of his career. And then all those European players, you know, Poulter, and Garcia and some of those Keimer, they were all toward the end anyway. Were they big names? Were they recognizable? Did they, you know, get you to watch at some point? Sure, but I think in terms of the competitiveness of golf, it's probably three or four in my opinion. Cam Smith was playing as good as anybody when he left. I would put Rahm definitely there. If the PGA Tour said we can take one back, I think Rahm would definitely be the choice. But 3 to 4, I think, is right.
Mm-hmm. Brian Kosiel. Brian, what's up with Tee to Green this week?
All right, well, we just did a podcast last night. We talked about some of these things, but we also talked about slow play. That's been a big topic on the PGA Tour, and our topic was, how much do fans actually care? Do they care that golf's on at noon on a Sunday on Golf Channel and then goes over to CBS and then doesn't end until 6:30 or 6:45. So we all admitted that it's slow, and we all admitted that pros should not be playing a round in 5 hours, but we wanted to know, does it actually matter? If it's on TV, does it matter if you're going from shot to shot to shot, if guys in between are taking long? So that was kind of what we discussed on our podcast. If anybody wants to check it out, it's on our social media pages at T2G Buffalo. And then our first show is March 1st, so we're about 2.5 weeks away from our first show. It'll be at Golf Dojo, our first show, and then we'll be heading across courses across Western New York from every Saturday going forward after that.
Very good. Thanks, Brian.
Okay, guys, have a great day.
Brian Koziel of Tee to Green on the Four Nations and the upcoming golf event, the Genesis. When we get back, any DK Metcalf people out there, it might be time to put that to bed. I think that idea is dying here. Get you a quote about Metcalf from the offensive coordinator, from their head coach. This one does not appear to be smokescreen. I'll be shocked if Metcalf is moved. We'll tell you exactly why when we return. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.